The following takes place between 7 and 8.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron of Florida Estates Winery. Wine enthusiasts can call us at any time during the broadcast by dialing 646-727-3235. Once again, the number is 646-727-3235. Wine industry representatives are also encouraged to join us on air.
This is Stuart Scott from Camas Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Mike Brown, the Wine Growers Association of Georgia.
The executive director.
Michelle Meyer, I work with my father, Les Meyer, at Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Westport Rivers Vineyard and Winery.
We're located at 417 Vicksburg Road, Westport, Mass., and our phone number is 508.
I'm on the board of directors for the Minnesota Grape Growers Association.
Always informative and entertaining.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
It's all about wine.
I don't know what happened with them tonight. Must have been the punch or something.
The punch.
On the way up. Now they're all drinking wine, so everybody's cool. But great weather outside right now. So here in our area in Florida.
Did it rain on you this afternoon?
It did in Tampa. We had the lightning all around us, but up here I don't know. I wasn't home until after 5. So, but very cool. We have a busy show, and I was listening to that intro, and I just when we hear all the other people saying, you know, Camas Prairie Winery and the executive director, and it's just really cool to have all these guests on here and talk about things that they are passionate about and you know, discuss it, you know, with us on the air, and really appreciate that. So we're going to be expanding that, and because we've had so many guests, New York probably could be an intro on their own. New Mexico. We haven't done New York yet, so last week and the week before last, with 6 guests, I think we've had in 2 weeks, last 2 weeks.
Right.
Incredible. They could have their own intro on All About Wine. Maybe we could change it up and do a different one each time. But it's very cool to hear them and, you know, come on the show and everything and do their intros on there. So thank you all for joining us. It's that time again, 7 p.m. Eastern time for All About Wine at 646-727-3235. Call us at that number. Get on the switchboard, and we'll bring you on if you have questions, comments, or anything with our topic tonight and wine in general. So be sure it's in some way or shape form about wine, W-I-N-E. not W-H-I-N-E. That's probably a different show. But love to have you on, and you can call us at that number, 646-727-3235. I need to be done with this because we have a little bit of introduction to what we're going to be discussing tonight, as well as probably the next few weeks, I guess.
Right.
It's the great state of New York, the Big Apple. Right. Yeah.
Well, that's where the Big Apple is located, but
exactly.
Big Apple
that's
the
right.
City. So.
The entire state. That's right.
Yeah, we're going to do the whole state, not just the Big Apple.
Let me rewind and scratch that part up.
There is a winery in the Big Apple.
Yes. Oh, really?
Yeah, in the Big Apple. Okay. Yeah, New York. In New York, New York. There is a winery. Discovered. So, you know.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah. So, New York, we're going to be, like Mike just said, probably for the next 3-4 weeks, we're going to be doing New York because it is actually, I believe, third in the nation is the largest number of wineries. California,
wow.
1, Washington, 2, and New York, 3, the latest things I just read. I thought they were like 4 behind. Also Oregon, but latest things I've been reading, it's they're number 3. So, yay New York for that. And they have a lot of areas, a lot of AVAs, a lot of stuff in New York to talk about, and a lot of wineries. And hopefully, we're going to be able to talk to a lot of different wineries over the next 3 or 4 weeks from the New York area. But as always, we like to start out telling you about the state, where it is, where it's located, what's around it, and all that, so you get a general idea. Some people out there are geographically challenged, and so it's I like to fill you in so you know what we're talking about. New York State is located in the northeastern United States. It separates northeast states, the Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Maine, from the rest of the country. You have to go through New York from there to get to anywhere else in the country, well, unless you go through Canada. It is bordered on the east by Vermont, Massachusetts, and Connecticut, bordered on the north by Canada. It does touch the ocean. New York City is right there on the ocean, so it does touch the Atlantic Ocean. South of New York City and south east of New York is bordered by New Jersey. And then south and west of New Jersey is Pennsylvania. So northeast United States, New York State. The elevation goes from sea level all the way up to quite a few different rivers and mountains and lakes throughout the state. There's quite a few there. The geography of the state of New York was actually formed by the glaciers millions of years ago, and that's where a lot of the lakes came from. It is at the northern edge of the Appalachian Mountains, so you still have some of the mountains coming up through there. Actually more of the eastern part of the state than anywhere else. The counties, there are 62 counties in New York. There is a few small ones. New York City is a county. Bronx is a county. Kings County, Queens, Richmond, all very small counties down in the south, very tip of the state, down and around the cities there. But then you can get on up in the northern part of the state, and you have the St. Lawrence County, which is enormous, and quite a few others around there. So 62 counties all total. One of the areas we'll be talking about is Long Island. There's quite a few lakes on that. And Suffolk County and Nassau County are the two. Suffolk County is the main one on that. We also will be talking a lot about the Finger Lakes area, which consists of like four or five different counties there. The main highways, because it is located where it is, there is I-90, which is a turnpike toll road that runs through the state all the way from Albany, actually all the way from the coast through Albany, which is the capital, by the way, Albany, New York, straight across the state. That is a toll highway, cuts down from Buffalo south. Also, I-96 runs on the western part of the state. I-90, I just mentioned I-81 north and south through Syracuse. We have I-87 along the eastern edge of the state. I-94, I-88, I-490, I-84, I-684, I-87, I-495, a lot of them. Interstates are through the state of New York. New York State is a sort of an oblong state. On the western edge is Buffalo, New York, just south of Niagara Falls. Rochester, New York is up in the area. Buffalo gets a lot of snow and a lot of bad weather from the lake effect. Snow's up there. Syracuse, about in the middle of the state, and right in the gateway, I guess, to the Finger Lakes, if you want to call it that, gateway. Albany on the far eastern part of the state. It is the capital, and then New York City and everything around there is in the east and southern part, far southern part of the state. Elevation through New York, we go from sea level, which is the Atlantic Ocean, the lowest point in the state, which is down Long Island, New York City, all that, all the way up to Mount Marcy, which is at 5,344 feet above sea level. Quite an elevation there, the highest point in New York, Mount Marcy. The rivers and lakes, They're all over New York, simply because of the glaciers back in the early, uh, uh, well, in history. The glaciers came down, left a lot of rivers and lakes through New York. It is bordered by Lake Ontario in the north central part of the state. Lake Erie is on the far western part of the state. Connecting Lake Erie and Lake Ontario is Niagara Falls. St. Lawrence River runs out to on out toward the Atlantic Ocean. Lake Champlain is the border, northern border, separates Vermont from New York. There's a lot of lakes running, or a lot of rivers rather, running down to the lake. Hudson River being one that we will be talking about quite a bit, since Hudson River is an AVA in New York. Also, we'll be talking a lot about the lake regions, the Seneca Lake, the Cayuga Lake, all these. This is the Finger Lakes area, referred to as the Finger Lakes area, simply because they're all just little skinny, long lakes referred to as Finger Lakes, and that's where a lot of wineries are. So that will be an area that we will be covering also. So we'll be talking in more detail about the Finger Lakes, the Hudson River area, Long Island, and also the Lake Erie area and Buffalo area and all that. A lot of wineries in all those areas. So tonight, our speaker is a well, let me give a little background. I got a hold of Cornell University simply because we have been hearing about Cornell so much every time we speak to any winery in the northern part of the United States. If you recall, if you've heard the programs or if you've listened to them on archives, just about everyone that we have talked to, about every winery we've talked to, has always referred to Cornell University as where they have gotten their grapes, or how they have helped them with growing the grapes, or how they have referred them to different ones that are grown in the area. Maine, quite a few there have talked about Cornell. Even the ones in the northern areas over in Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota have also referred to not only just Minnesota University, but also Cornell as a big help in the grapes and planting of the grapes and Finger Lakes all the time. So we I caught a hold of Cornell University and invited them to join us on the show. And we have Christopher, or Chris James Gerling. I hope that's pronounced Gerling instead of Gerling. Chris Gerling is going to join us. He is an extension associate. Let me read you his overview, and then we'll get him on the program, and we'll let him tell you in more detail about Cornell and what they've been doing. But his overview, this is on his website from the Cornell University profile. It says, it is my objective to leverage the resources of Cornell University so that they might benefit the wine industry of New York State and the northeastern United States, so that wine of the highest possible quality and profitability is produced. To this end, I engage with industry members in formal and informal settings to help understand commercial challenges and design extension materials that best address these needs. I try to serve as a liaison between the research and commercial sectors, and if I may editorialize, he is tonight. Thank you, Chris. To help ensure that research is industry-driven whenever possible, and that the industry learns of and benefits from research results. I also try to publicize the efforts undertaken by Cornell researchers on behalf of the wine industry in the hope of sustaining and further developing support from the Enology Program, NYSAES-CALS, and the university as a whole. And Chris, you'll have to explain to us what those letters are on that. I am not familiar with them all. So, if I may introduce and bring on Chris from Cornell University. Welcome, Chris. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. It's great that you're able to come on. Bragged about you a little bit there. I hope you heard me.
I did.
Good. And I have the advantage I get to see a picture of you. Well, Chris, I called Chris earlier in the day, and he said, let's do this at my home. And then he paused for a second and goes, no, I have a young child at home. He said, so we better do it here at the office. He said, I don't want crying in the background. So he is a young father, and so we congratulate you on that. Tell us about Cornell University. Just a quick background on Cornell University. How long it's been there and what it is and all that, so people will know a little bit about that.
Okay. So the beginning of Cornell is Ezra Cornell, who was himself kind of a person who worked in agriculture, and also he was kind of a bit of an inventor and an entrepreneur, and he eventually set aside this land, part of his farm that started the university. And the founding motto for Cornell is from Ezra himself in 1865 was, I would found an institution where any person can, but the idea is where any person could find instruction in any study is the idea. So it was setting aside a real breadth of information. You know, it was supposed to be wide ranging. We were never supposed to focus on just one thing. That was pretty unique. And the other thing that was kind of a landmark about Cornell is, I'm not certain it was the first, but it was one of the first land grant universities, and it's a land grant for New York State. The land grant for New York State, which means that the government also contributed some of the land for the university. And the idea was that in return for this having this land granted, the university would always try to help the residents of the state in as many ways as possible. So,
And so it has expanded since then. When was Cornell first established? What year?
1865.
Wow. So was established during or right after the Civil War. That's interesting.
Yes.
The viticulture and enology department. Tell us when that started and about that.
That is much newer. The formal, what we call the formal kind of program of enology and viticulture, which is now a major, an undergraduate major. So a student can enter Cornell as a freshman and major now in viticulture and or enology. And that is, I'll say like 2007, roughly, is when that kind of formally happened. So that's fairly recent compared to 1865. So
you're going to get... You're going to get your first graduating class that started then this year.
Yeah. And we've had a couple people, because of the way the major kind of phased in and because of people who had the right prerequisites, we've kind of had, I don't know if we say one or two classes now of official kind of majors who have graduated. So, yeah.
Oh, good. So and the study, tell us what the study consists of to get a degree from enology and viticulture.
So for enology and viticulture, so the enology part is the winemaking track, of course, and the viticulture is the grape growing track. That part is, I should point that out first because, you know, it's not obvious to people all the time. But so enology kind of springs out of the food science department, is kind of its mother department, and the viticulture is out of the plant science department. Enology will consist of some basic chemistry, biology, then microbiology, and eventually you will take some specific classes in the program that have to do with fermentations, that have to do with processing, that have to do with the specific chemistry and microbiology and flavors, you know, that have to do with wine. The viticulture side, you will also do your chemistry and your biology, and then you'll plant science kind of classes, and then you'll do classes that are more specific to growing grapes, to managing vineyards, to also learning about genetics of grapes and things like that. So it's still... Every major at Cornell, because of the founding motto, you're going to take a lot of classes that are broader and fewer that are very specific. But you'll still have your few in major classes about winemaking or grape growing. So yeah.
Does Cornell have an extensive vineyard area that they can actually get hands-on?
We do, yes. We have a few plantings. We have I'm based in Geneva, which is an hour from Ithaca. We have the New York State Agricultural Experiment Station, which is NYSAES, and that first acronym you were reading that I was
right.
talking about.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're about an hour north. There's the two main Finger Lakes are Seneca Lake and Cayuga Lake. They're the two largest. We're at the top of Seneca, and then to the east is Cayuga. Ithaca's at the bottom. We have, I don't know, roughly 20 acres maybe of grapes up here. And then in Lansing, New York, which is just a few miles north of Ithaca, there is another planting, and that's where the students do a lot of their work. That those are also part of Justine Vandenhoevel, who's the viticulture professor, part of her program. And we have a teaching winery, which is right on campus. Right now it's at the Orchard Store, where they process cider, apple cider, and things like that. We're renovating our food science building, and when that renovation is complete, then there will be a more state-of-the-art facility for the winery on campus. So, yeah.
No. What, Cornell, I didn't ask this, and you didn't mention it, but for people out there listening, where is Cornell University in main campus?
Ithaca, New York.
It is.
So Ithaca, New York is, as I said, at the bottom of Cayuga Lake. It is about an hour south of Syracuse, New York, an hour south of Route 90, the interstate, the thruway that goes across. And we like to call Ithaca centrally isolated, equally far away from everywhere. So, yeah. But it's a really nice town.
That area is somewhat isolated, yes.
Yeah.
It is. So the grapes, let's get more specific about what the viticulture and enology programs have done in creating grapes and introducing grapes and providing grapes to people in northern climates.
All righty. So there has been a grape breeding program at Cornell for quite some time, before even there was formal viticulture enology programs and everything like that. There was fruit breeding programs. We've also released a number of apples, but the grapes are one thing that we're known for. And it was in 1972 was Cayuga White, and Cayuga White is probably the most widely planted, especially in New York State, release. And the idea behind all this breeding program, and there are wine grapes, there are also table grapes that are seedless and things like that that have been released. But the idea behind all of these is that our climate is obviously vastly different from the climate in California, but also it's different than Bordeaux. And so we're trying to grow grapes that are more cold tolerant, which is important to us, and also maybe more disease resistant, because we also have a fair amount of humidity here. Today we have way too much humidity, and the humidity meter on my scale is broken. It's at the top and it won't go any higher. The idea was to breed grapes that would have the solid wine quality, but would also, you know, would not be as vulnerable to the various climatic challenges that we can have in this part of the world. So, Cayuga White was one of the main ones, and it remains a real just steady kind of workhorse grape for wineries in the area. It's very flexible. It can go in a lot of different kinds of wines, from basic table wines to sparkling wines to dessert wines to blends. And then along the way, there was Traminette, which is kind of supposed to be Gewürztraminer, but Gewürztraminer that's a little less delicate. Gewürztraminer is a very temperamental grape. It's very sensitive to cold. It's also sensitive to diseases. So Traminette was supposed to be kind of all the flavors of Gewürztraminer, but with just, you know, a little more vineyard friendly for around here. Chardonnay is a grape that has really caught on. And, well, Traminette and Chardonnay have both caught on in the Midwest in places like Indiana and Missouri and Ohio. They're growing a lot of that. And then more recently, in 2006, we released three grapes, two reds and a white. Red grapes are really the challenge around here. White grapes, we really feel like we have some solid white grapes, but red wine grapes remain kind of a challenge for us in some seasons. And so there was Noiré, Coro Noir are the two reds, and then Valvin Muscat, which is a white, which has a Muscat character, hence the Valvin Muscat name. And Valvin Muscat, I just got an email yesterday, was used in a wine that won the Governor's Cup in Missouri, I guess just days ago. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So you you mentioned just a few of those. When was the first one? When did they first start to do these hybrids? And they are French-American hybrids, I assume, then?
Well, these are American. I mean, these can have all different parentages. They, you know, Labrusca or Vinifera or other hybrids. We've called French-American hybrids tend to be hybrids that either developed in France or that were crossed using, you know, French, you know, the European vinifera varieties and the American Labrusca or whatever. And so that may or may not be true with ours. But the first one, if I'm looking at the releases, looks like it was 1906.
Wow.
Was the first grape, and up to 2006 was the most recent.
Wow.
So. Yeah.
So wow, that's I didn't realize they'd done it that far back. So the I understand that there's a lot of vinifera varieties now being grown in the New York area. Are you you as Cornell trying to work with more of the vinifera varieties because of that, or?
Yeah, certainly we work with both. You know, we have a research winery here that I manage. The two main thrusts that I say of our two main goals downstairs are, the one is evaluating the new hybrids that we were talking about, the new selections that could be new and improved and better for the industry, and then the other one is to figure out the best ways to grow and make wine from the wine grapes we already know of. So we have plantings, and we also bring in grapes from commercial wineries in the area. And we will make wine from, of course, Riesling, you know, but Chardonnay, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, Pinot Noir, all those. And we have trials going in our vineyards and in vineyards around, trying to figure out the best possible, from rootstock to clones to training techniques to fertilization schemes, you know, all those irrigation schemes, all these things that we're looking at to try to optimize them for our region. And then in the research winery, we're looking at the best yeast strains, the best fermentation temperatures, nutrient additions, so trying to optimize them for our region. So we are looking at both new varieties but also the established ones. So yeah.
You mentioned something there that was rather interesting, too. I think people might be a little interested in. We're talking a lot about grapes here, but that doesn't just stop in the vineyard. You mentioned yeast and all sorts of other things once it gets into the winery itself. You all do research on yeast and everything else also, then, I assume.
Yes. Oh, yes. And that's primarily what I and my department, in the food science department and in the oenology labs, that's what we do. All the things that I just told you about the vineyards, you know, I told you, as they say, more than I know, probably. You know, I probably lied to you a couple times inadvertently, because I am not a vineyard expert. You know, the winery is really where we're focused right now. And so, you know, we do deal with both sides of those, working closely together, obviously, because they're so interconnected. You can't do one without the other.
Right.
But that's our focus over here. Is, you know, we don't go out in the vineyards. We have all machines to look at grapes once they've arrived at the press pad. So yeah.
Well then, since that is your end of it, tell us about that. Tell us about what happens and the yeast and everything. I mean, the development of that. You're developing yeast that will do what?
Well, we don't develop yeasts here. We just mostly evaluate them. There are programs that are coming up with new ones. Here, we mostly deal with ones that have already been isolated, and we just do trials comparing them. One thing what we can do down in our research winery is we can make sure that we get in some some lot of fruit that is all the same, and we can split it up, and we can have just one variable. So we can maybe just a different yeast strain, but they're all the same besides that, or maybe just a different temperature, but they're all the same besides that. And then we can run them through fermentations. But and so the whole time we're doing chemical analysis, you know, we're looking at the different acids, we're looking at the amount of sugar that's consumed, we're looking at any, you know, off flavors that are that might develop, the color, alcohol, all these things. And then we can do formal sensory evaluation here as well to see, you know, how does it actually smell and taste once, you know, some parameter has been changed, and see what that effect might be. And that's what our lab is really looking at. So
formal sensory evaluation. That mean you have a bunch of people that smell it?
Yep. That's what it means. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and people always say to us, you know, man, you guys must have the most fun job. You get to sit around tasting wine all day. And
I know. I'm a winemaker myself, and you know, it is a fun job, though. We have to agree with them. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's great.
It is. It's not as glamorous as people think it is. You know, after an hour or so, it starts to. And when you have very subtle differences, and you're trying to quantify those, you know, that's not so much fun. And then, the other thing that our lab does that I should mention is we do analysis. So people send us wine from anywhere in the country or the world. We do routine analysis, and we can, but that's not our bread and butter. Is kind of troubleshooting, because we have a lot of experience, unfortunately, with weird wines. And so, my colleague who runs this lab, you know, everyone says, you must have a great job, because, you know, all people do is send you wine. But he says, yeah, no one ever sends me their favorite wine. They always send me, you know, the one that smells funny or has something floating in it or whatever. And so, But we, you know, we do the troubleshooting as well. And so, yeah, we never get the wines that people are proud of. You know, no one ever just said, I thought this was great. I wanted you to have it. It's always the other side of it. So, yeah.
Why does it smell like this? Yeah.
Yes.
That's a good point. Well, you see, from around the world, you're actually, you're doing testing for everywhere.
Yeah. New York State is of course our focus, because that's where we're located, and that's, you know, where we receive taxpayer funds from. So that they're our primary client base. But we are, you know, anybody's welcome to submit a sample from anywhere. And sometimes we get wines from importers, you know, saying they promised us this and we think it's this. Do you have any way of verifying that or whatever? And so
That's interesting too. I've dealt with different importers, and I can understand their concern on that. pH levels up there in New York, because of the humidities and the soil being sandy, all that. Do you all test and try to adjust pH levels or work with pH levels on the wines with the wineries?
Well, for the most part, since it's cool here, our pHs tend to be nice and low, and usually that's one of the best parts about this area, is that you'll get a nice pH that is comfortable for wine range, you know, somewhere like in the 3.3 range, you know, that's really good. Last year was one of the hottest, if not the hottest, on record in terms of growing degree days, and so then pHs started to push a little bit higher, and that, you know, made people a little bit nervous. But, you know, in this year, I don't know, we'll see. This year we're rapidly catching up. But for the most part, pH is one of the things that is not a concern for us. And whereas in California they need to add acid, if 9 times out of 10 around here, if you're going to make an acid adjustment, you're going to be reducing it, the acid. So.
Oh, wow. Wow. I'll ask you this, and I will ask the wineries as I talk to them, but the weather up there, it's very, very cold in the winter. Is the grapes you're developing all cold-resistant, or do you have some that are marginal? Are you developing for other areas that are a little bit warmer?
Yes, both. It's cold here, and you know, if you're in Florida, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so we're very cold for you.
Yes.
But from for Minnesota or whatever, we're not very cold, you know. Where we are right in Geneva and Ithaca, actually, we don't get all that cold. We don't see much, if anything, below zero most years for most of the land. You know, that doesn't mean that, you know, one night there might not, you know, in a certain valley or a hill it might get to be, you know, minus four or whatever. But lately we haven't seen a whole lot of that.
Really?
If you go north, well, I mean, we have this protection from Lake Ontario. The Great Lakes are – Lake Erie and Lake Ontario are kind of around us, and then these lakes – also give us a little bit of a little boost to keep it a little bit warmer, and so the grapes that we develop are we're always thinking about, you know, a minimum that Dr. Bruce Reich, the grape breeder, is trying to go for a minimum, and that is going to be hardier than most vinifera, you know, in terms of the cold that it can withstand. You know, he would like to be in probably the minus 10 to minus 15 range. If he could be. Now, compared to in Minnesota, when they're going for all their grapes, that they are supposed to be hardy to minus 30.
Right. We talked to Minnesota earlier, and they're saying that it's, you know, they're getting some temperatures down, you know, extended lower ground temperatures of 30, 35 degrees below. So that's hard. That's tough on the grapes.
Yeah, that's a very different animal than, yeah. We don't see that. North of us, we do. In the Adirondacks, pushing up towards, you know, towards Canada even, the Minnesota varieties are all the rage now, because they are allowing people who were in, like, the Thousand Islands region, which is east of Lake Ontario, or in Lake Champlain region, or in Vermont or New Hampshire, people who really, you know, were asking for trouble planting grapes previously with these varieties, they can mostly get away with it. So, that's been one of the biggest growing areas of the last few years for us is the whole kind of Adirondack region, which we never thought would be a hotbed of wineries and vineyards, but it's becoming one. So yeah.
Well, that's amazing. I you know, you're right. I did. Whenever anybody talks about New York wines, they immediately say Finger Lakes, and then Long Island, and then Hudson, and that's about what you hear. You know, the Adirondacks is not something that's brought up too often.
Yeah, so. But it's coming, and it's a great tourist place, and so, you know, it's a natural fit for people, you know, because it's a beautiful area to visit, and so people would love to visit wineries while they were there, and so I think that it's. Now that they have the grapes to do it, it's going to be exciting. So
New York then has such a diversified climate from one end to the other. I mean, you've got Long Island that's right on the ocean. It has major ocean influence for warmth, but then you're talking about Lake Champlain area that is extremely cold. So if you're developing grapes, you're stuck. I mean, you just do what you can, and that's about it. It's not for your state specifically, but it's just more or less for regions.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, and New York is, you know, it's a very large state, and a lot of people who haven't spent much time thinking about New York State think New York City and the suburbs of New York must be the state. But obviously, the vast majority of the state is nothing like the city. We have very diverse soils. We have all the regions, you know, we have Long Island and the Hudson Valley and up to the Adirondacks, and then we have the Finger Lakes to the west, and then further west we have the Lake Erie region, which has traditionally been a huge juice grape producer, thousands of acres for grape juice, for Concord grape juice and for Niagara white grape juice. But they're also having a boom in wineries that are being founded there too, because it's a grape area, so why not? And we see very different soils. We see very different climates and conditions and grapes. We have to kind of classify. You know, we have at least three different regions in terms of climate. If you want to kind of go, Long Island is, as you said, kind of a maritime region, and I think that's how they're defining themselves currently, is maritime. They had more heat units last year than most areas in California did. It was a very cold year in California.
Some.
Yeah, but so they had some phenomenal heat. And then where we are, you know, kind of the medium in the Hudson and the Finger Lakes and Lake Erie, and then up to the north, which is kind of, you know, beyond. We call ourselves a cool climate, and they're probably a cold climate, you know, versus so. And the grapes that are developed, you obviously aren't going to hit all of them necessarily with one grape, but you know, they continue to kind of figure out the characteristics that everybody's searching for and try to hit, you know, at least the middle as much as possible and try to work with what people have. And on Long Island, you know, they don't necessarily in need of new varieties because they can grow pretty much anything that right. they need to. They have Merlot there, which is a grape that is a riskier bet anywhere else in the state, but they can do quite well with it. So.
Oh. So the Cayuga White is growing just about everywhere then?
Cayuga White is the most widely distributed, I would say, of the Cornell releases. It's also the oldest, so I think that there's partially just it takes time for people to adopt the new grapes. You know, it's not like corn where you can just put it in and harvest it in a few months. You know, your grape
right.
is a multi-year investment. You know, hopefully 25 or 30 years, and so people think carefully about what they're going to plant. And Cayuga White has been one that's been really good. It's pretty flexible, and you know, it's not going to survive at the top of Lake Champlain by any means, but it can survive in a lot of places. So, yeah.
You mentioned one thing too. I want to talk just for a few minutes about is the Buffalo area and the Niagara area and the fruit grapes that they grow there, the juice grapes. What type of grapes are used primarily for the juice?
It's Concord and Niagara are the.
And that's just about it then, huh?
Yeah, there are other ones, but those are the two that are the vast majority, I think, of what is used for the juice industry. So yeah.
If somebody gets themselves a jug of Welch's grape juice, and it's going to pretty much be one of those.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
and Welch's, the National Grape Cooperative, is one of the primary operators out of you know, a lot of Lake Erie grapes go there to, and you know, they make 100% Concord grape juice, and you know, it's a neat product, and they've had some really neat marketing campaigns. I don't know if you've seen Alton Brown from Food Network, you know, talking
yes.
about.
Yeah,
all that kind of stuff. Grape is a flute. Is it grape is a fruit, not a flavor? You know, I think that's a good point.
I like that. Yeah. I've always liked that. And,
yeah.
And so that's good. Mike, you have anything you'd like to ask Chris?
I've got. Have you done any research or any growing organically? You do organic farming out there, or?
Yes, we do. We do work on that. It is very difficult in our region compared to other places. You know, there are places in Europe and in the West where it's very, very dry. They get great breezes in the evening. There's almost no moisture, and they can irrigate to get the water they want. And so the moisture and the stuff is just not there. And so it makes it very easy. Here it's very challenging to grow organically because, well, we like to think of our region, we are the home of powdery mildew. We are the origin. So, you know, talk about, yeah. Yeah. There's at least one of the disease that we are kind of the home region for. I'm not sure if it's Downy or if it's something else. But so we have a lot more to contend with, and it makes it challenging. But there are people who are doing work on organic methods. We also have a program called IPM, you may be familiar, Integrated Pest Management.
Oh,
which
yes.
is working to use, yeah, it's just trying to be sensible with chemical use and using alternative methods when necessary and trying to just, you know, limit your. The one thing that is exciting that I can, that is kind of still, you know, on the radar and is still in the pipeline is that Bruce Reich, the great breeder, has what he calls no-spray plots. So he takes samples that he thinks he has bred, and this is all traditional breeding. This is not GMO. This is just traditional, you know, pollination, that he thinks he has bred that will have excellent disease resistance. He plants them out in a vineyard plot and leaves them to basically do what they will do. There are lots of vineyards and orchards in the area, lots of inoculum of lots of diseases. And then they come out later and see who made it. And then eventually they take the ones that have made it, grow them up, and see if the grapes are worth anything. And right now there is one in the pipeline that not only seems to survive with no spraying of any kind of material, which is saying something around here, but also seems to have a nice wine quality. So
wow.
We could be not too far away from a grape that lends itself to this. So yeah,
that sounds exciting.
Wow.
It's very exciting because, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if you want to test it further, send it down here to Florida, and I'll give it a good test.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, well, yeah. We don't have things like Pierce's disease up here. So
yeah, I know. A little too cold for it, yeah.
Yeah, so there's things that – there's advantages to being cold, yeah. What was I going to say about that? It was just that these varieties, you know, will – I think that this is something that everybody, of course, is excited about. And I don't know if you saw in the New York Times, there was a Cornell researcher who's not really part of our whole viticulture and enology family, but he's working on genetics, and he was working on just the genetics of the grapes, and it turns out that the vast majority, 80%, let's say, of the cultivated grapes in the world have either a sibling or a parent-child relationship genetically.
Huh.
And what it's saying is that pretty much all the grapes we're growing in the world are very, very similar genetically, and that's not a good thing when you think about vulnerability to various viruses or other diseases. And so these new hybrids with these new genes, you know, that provides us with some protection, because if, you know, some things that are too alike genetically could all be vulnerable to the same pathogen, you know, which is like phylloxera, you know, and grapes, the grapes that we have chosen throughout the years have always been the grapes that we have liked for flavor, and the grapes, you know, are they reproduce, we graft them, we do it asexually, so they're not getting the genetic, you know, variation, and so that's why grapes, you know, especially in regions like this, need all the sprays and need all the, you know, the TLC, and so having these new genes out there will be good. So yeah.
Yeah, and that's a great point there. I mean, I never realized that 80% of them were connected one way. But when you start looking at grapes, and I've talked about grapes on previous programs, and it's funny, a lot of times I'll say, and this one is connected to this, without even realizing how often I say that. You know, so
yeah, they're all mighty connected. Yes. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's like anything else, they're almost inbred, and it's a little too much. And so, yeah. One thing that we have here that just in passing is interesting is we have, speaking of genetics and all the different genes, is we have a repository here. In Geneva, we host the East Coast, the cold climate grape germplasm repository. And what that is two vines of like 1,100 different varieties of grapes from all around the world. UC Davis has the warm climate ones. We have the cold climate ones. So we have all the grapes that kind of thrive in cold weather. And the reason that we're keeping all these grapes, one of the reasons at least, there's many reasons, but one primary reason is to preserve this genetic diversity in case any kind of superbug that could, you know, that could wipe out, you know, a lot of the genes we have out there now. So.
Right. Like Pierce disease, if it starts getting warmer and warm climate up north, further and further.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. I had a thought that I was going to ask you a question, and I think it may have... Oh, you mentioned downy mildew and stuff like that. What things have you all tested for and have been trying to... trying to find ways to get around it in different things like downy mildew and leaf blight and all sorts of stuff that might hit the grapevines. Are you doing testing on all that also?
Yes, we have a plant pathology department here in Geneva and Ithaca. They're both, and they look at all sorts of different things. I mean, from the breeding to trying to breed grapes that are more resistant to these things. Then there's trials going on with traditional sprays, trying to figure out which ones work and in what and what regimes, how they work the best, how to prevent them, the resistance from building up. We have an engineer here who works on sprayers, who figures out ways to either retrofit your sprayer or to build new sprayers that are going to, you know, be use the least amount of material to get the best coverage possible.
Wow.
We had a trial with looking at the effect of ultraviolet light on powdery mildew. We have people who are looking at all the different life cycle issues going on with these various microbes when, you know, when they're pathogens, when they're reproducing and when they're becoming, you know, bad and when they're overwintering, and figure out ways that they may be disrupted in certain times. There's people looking at a lot of different angles of all these diseases.
Those are things that need to be done, too. That's great. I never realized that, you know, all aspects of it, too. I mean, you can't, you know, the spraying and all, that's why people are setting their canopies up so different to try to beat it. But, you know, that's another way to do it.
Yeah. And one of my colleagues, you know, one of the things he says is that, you know, we've been trying to get by without these fungicides for so long, and we put a lot of money into that, and but one thing to do for now is to figure out the best way to use these, you know, to make them the most effective, to use the least amount of them, to make them, you know, so that for now at least we're being as responsible as possible, and while we still continue to look for ways to eventually, you know, phase them out. So
I just thought of something, too. All the thousands of acres of juice grapes that they have, are those being affected by downy mildew and powdery mildew and leaf blight and all this other stuff?
I'm not going to be real specific here because the vineyard is not as much my forte. On the most part, Labrusca grapes that have evolved here in this region, along with all the other diseases, have also evolved a fair amount of tolerance. You know, like Labrusca is tolerant to phylloxera. You know,
right.
There are some diseases that they are still susceptible to, but for the most part, Labrusca grapes, the juice grapes, need to be sprayed far, far less than like vinifera, because they've evolved with all these same problems. You know, and the vinifera haven't. So yeah.
Right. That answers my question. The same thing with a lot of other stuff. Labrusca grapes are resistant to a lot of things, Pierce disease and all that too, because they've grown up around it and built the resistance. So, that's interesting. Mike, any other questions?
No, I don't think. Have we covered the soils that you use, or have you done research on any particular soils or anything, or?
We have amazingly diverse soils here. The lakes, the Finger Lakes, were glacially formed, and so the glaciers came across and just kind of tore everything up and pulled everything up and threw everything around. And the result is that you could have a vineyard 10 acres, and it could be on a hill, and the bottom of the hill could be a completely different soil type than the top of the hill. So that makes for challenges. So they're looking at all different aspects of that, and whereas like for Long Island, for example, it's very sandy and it's much more uniform, and so the region, we have a lot of different soils, and we, you know, people work with it as best they can. So
with the glaciers, it's one of the things I said at the beginning. Glaciers really created a unique topography in that state. With the lakes and the mountains and everything else. So.
Yeah, it's and not, and as I said before, lakes and mountains are not what people think of when they think of New York. But once you get north of, you know, a little bit north of Manhattan, it's a very agricultural state. So
and a very old state. Well, Chris, thank you very, very much. We really appreciate all of the information. Tell us that you are our introduction to New York wineries and wines. And you did a great job. Really appreciate the time that you spent with us this evening.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
And if anyone wants to know anything about any more about Cornell University and the programs and all that, just click Cornell University in your search engine, and you will get more information than you would ever consider looking for. That's what I did, and it popped up, 3 million different hits. So
Yeah, we really only scratched the surface here. There's people doing a lot of different things in a lot of different areas.
Yeah, it's big. Cornell is not classified as an Ivy League, is it?
We are. Yes.
You are?
Yes.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I was thinking maybe so, but then I wasn't sure. So you are an Ivy League school then?
Yes. And, you know, I mean, the T-shirts say we grow the ivy, you know, because we have the actual, you know, we've been talking about what the Ivy League means. I mean, when it comes down to the Ivy League, is just an athletic conference. It's just, put together, it's just a group of schools that play sports against each other and don't give scholarship, you know. So that's, so we participate in that league and, we have the best hockey team and lacrosse team, so yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Got to set your priorities.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Chris.
I'm sorry.
It was fantastic, and we really do appreciate you taking the time to join us, Mike. Anything?
Yeah. Do you have any particular web address or contact information that people can get in touch with? Is there any standard?
Yes, for us, it's, for the viticulture and enology program, it is, it's no www, but maybe it'll work even if you do that. I'm not sure, but you don't need it. It's grapesandwine, all one word, .cals, C-A-L-S, which is the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, .cornell.edu. So grapesandwine.cals.cornell.edu is us.
And spelled out, A-N-D?
And spelled out, yes.
Okay. D-U. Okay, I got that. I think that's it.
If you want to be overwhelmed, just click on the first on the faculty and staff link there and see how many people are listed in that. And
that's
a sense of what you're in for. So, yeah.
Absolutely. So grapes and wines. Any pearls on that? Grapes and wines.
Grapes and wine singular.
Okay.
Singular. Grapes and wine no s. Cals. Okay. C-A-L-S. Cornell.edu.
Cornell.edu. Okay.
You got that down. Okay. Very good.
So, again, thank you very much. We'll let you get home to your... How old is your young daughter?
She is 8.5 months.
8.5, a fun age.
And she has a new tooth today, so...
fantastic. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Really. That is a fun age. That really is.
Yeah.
So.
And if you talked there, you would have heard her opinion about that tooth.
Your first child?
Yes, this is our first.
Is it? Oh, good.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Thank you,
Chris.
Very cool.
We do appreciate your time. Have yourself a great evening. And, again, it was wonderful having you on the program tonight.
My pleasure.
Very
Thanks.
Good. Very good. Thank you.
All right. That was great. That was absolutely great.
Very interesting. Okay.
You know, I mean, it's just we're always hearing so much about Cornell and all what they're doing, everything. Every time we talked wineries, it was great to have someone on there and tell us actually, you know, what they are doing. And I learned
doing a lot.
Quite a bit.
Definitely doing a lot of interesting research and everything for the industry. So that was very cool. Let's see.
So we got less than 2 minutes left. So that worked out real well for us.
Wow, so we're still live. Okay.
Yeah, we're still live for another, I stay another 140. So we've still got a little bit more to go, but we're almost at the end here. Great program tonight. We will continue 90 seconds now. So we will continue New York next week. I'll start, actually, if I can find the wineries and pinpoint them to different areas, I'm going to try to do areas. Finger Lakes and Niagara and Hudson Valley and Long Island. So these are the main areas of New York, and so we'll try to continue on in each section and talk about them. So maybe we'll end up doing like a week on each one of those areas, and since there's four areas, we may be in New York for a while here. So
hopefully we'll get out there before winter.
Yes, we'll make a plan
winters.
On getting out before winter.
We'll become our own snowbirds.
Yeah, really. Gotta leave.
Yep.
Gotta go
pack
back down the
floor. Pack up and go south. That's right.
Gotta do it.
All right. So we'll look forward to that next Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Blog Talk Radio on the All About Wine show. And real quick, because I know we have about 30 seconds, do connect with us on Facebook. There's a lot of people out there on Facebook. Please look for All About Wine space BTR. It's All About Wine with spaces in it. BTR for Blog Talk Radio on Facebook. And we'd love to have you like us, our page on there, and you get information ahead of time. We found out about who was going to be on here tonight and from Cornell. So connect with us on Facebook, and we'd love to hear from you there. And you can add your comments and questions on the Facebook page as well. And we're over time. Well, I didn't
realize we're over time, yeah.
That was
episode
quick.
Ends okay, live. We're recording now.
Yeah. There's no beep or anything. There's no. Do you
no,
get
there
a countdown?
It just ends.
I guess so. The red light went yellow and says recording now.
Yeah,
so.
And it says recording. I noticed that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
I don't know if I should. Maybe I should do a 90-minute just automatically so we get all this stuff live. But we get a lot of listeners on archives anyway, so that's
yeah.
That's
most
cool.
Most of the listeners are on archives. Again, if you're archive listeners, thanks a lot. We do.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's great. Great
yeah.
to have you on archives, listening to us on iTunes. On I forgot one of the players that was out there that I was listening. I actually found the show on some third party site that I forgot I listed us on there. But there is a player on one. There's a player on one of the sites, and you can listen to it. And I forgot what the site was. I have to remember that one. Maybe next time I'll have that done. But I was going through some websites and that I had listed us on for. You know, just to get the word out, and I found a player on there, and I clicked on it, and it was one of the archive shows. So, yeah,
oh,
very
wow.
interesting. Yeah.
Well,
but definitely look for us on Facebook, and we'd love to have you like us. And we need we're at I don't know how many people now, but we need 25 to go to like a regular Earl website address. So on Facebook, so we need that.
Yeah, yeah. Join
anyway, you don't have any. Yeah. Do you have any events going on?
We have a class this Saturday. We have a class. If you want to learn more about wine, it's just Wine 101. It's coming up this Saturday. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
That's scheduled. And next week will be our festival. But
cool.
And okay. I'll be bottling wine probably between now and next week, or getting it ready and all sorts of stuff. It's time, and so. I'm going to be busy getting everything set up and starting a bottle of wine and all. So,
excellent. Okay.
I'll let
for
people
more,
know how that's going.
Yeah, absolutely. For more information on the wine class coming up this weekend or on Winefest, which will be coming up in the following Saturday, which we'll have a show between now and then. So,
right.
Call Florida State's Winery at 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. That's for Florida State's Winery. Or just go on out there. It's located 25241 State Road 52. That's 25241 State Road 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida 34639. That's Florida State's Winery. Open daily 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. And they got a neat gift shop there and a great place underneath the oak trees outside to have a great bottle of wine. And they're pet friendly as well. So. And let's see, what else? Closed major holidays. We don't have any coming up that I know of. Most major credit cards are accepted. And visit the website at www.floridaestateswines.com, floridaestateswines.com. That's all one. Don't put anything in between those. floridaestateswines.com. Or email the winery at corp@flewn.com, corp@flewn.com. If you have any inquiries about the show, All About Wine, you can email the show at this address, which is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. allaboutwine101@gmail.com. That goes to Ron. Love to hear from you. Let us know that you've been listening to the show on archives, however. And if you have any suggestions, comments, or questions or anything for an upcoming show, that's a great way to do it as well. You don't have to join us on the air, although we'd like to have you on air. That's fine. You email, and we'll present your question on the air or just make a discussion out of it. So check it out, and we will be back. I think that's everything? Yeah, we'll be back next Thursday, which would be June, August.
July 29th? No, 28th? I don't know. 28th. I don't have a calendar for me.
28th.
Yeah. What is 28th?
July 28th. I forgot where we're at. Let's see. So join us 7 p.m. Eastern time. And thank you again, Chris, from Cornell, for joining us up there in the
very
great
much.
State of
Thank
New York.
You.
And next week we will go on to part two of the great state of New York and their incredible wines that are coming out of New York. So we'll see you all. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Ron. And,
thank you.
Until next week. That'll do it. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
All right.